There you go, Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks. Hello, everyone. Just bring these slides up. Try and finish just before 11, so we have time for a few questions before we go on to the next thing. So if I do ramble on, give me a shout and I'll make sure I finish early. I'm going to focus today on mobile services and what it might mean to sort of you and your work and your libraries. I'll talk about some mainstream things like text messaging and social networks. I'll talk about some emerging things like QR codes and location-based services, and I'll talk a bit about some more sort of speculative or cutting-edge things, which is mainly augmented reality type applications. During this talk, seeing as I'm first up, I'll try and give you two specific challenges. I'll also may well ask you questions as we're going along as well, so try not to fall asleep, so we'll ask you stuff. Before I sort of launch into the full thing there, it's really nice to get an introduction where they don't say, turn off your mobile phones. Because I know I tend to go to things all over the place, going to briefings and conferences and staff development type events and all sorts. And almost all of them start off saying, oh, turn off your mobile phones. I want you to think a bit more about the sort of devices most of you have probably got in your pockets. I've just got a bit. I tend to have this in my pocket. That's probably the furthest away it's got from me in the last year. This thing here, it's not just a phone. I've got them listed down, so I'll never remember all the sort of things it goes. It knows where I am all the time through GPS or triangulation of the mobile phone signal if it doesn't reach GPS. Connects me instantly to friends and colleagues all over the world through email or Twitter or Facebook. Effortlessly connects me to the sea of information to the internet, which increasingly includes things like serious research databases. Acts as a gaming device, an electronic book reader, a way of watching or listening to television or radio programmes that I might have missed. It's an educational tool for my young children. It's a music player. It's a camera, a video camera, camcorder, a dictaphone, a sat-nav system, and sort of many more things that I've probably forgotten to list down when I was thinking about it for this talk. The fact that if I occasionally forget to click the sound off, it makes an irritating noise once in a while. It's sort of almost incidental. You know, it does so many things, it's so powerful. So thinking about that, think about it in your work as I'm talking today, but also today during the next 40 minutes, I want you to make sure you keep your phones on, use them to tweet. I'll be tweeting through this talk, though I think I've got the hashtag wrong, so they won't all come up. Stick updates on Facebook, blog while I'm doing it, make notes on your netbooks or your iPads or your phones or whatever. Use them in any way you see fit during this talk, because they're incredibly powerful devices and I don't want you to forget that. That's the sort of main message I want you to take away today. It's sort of terrible people ignoring them because every once in a while they make an irritating beep. Really take advantage of them the best you can, not just today and in your work as you go forward. So that's my little rant over. And on to sort of the meat of the talk, if you like. I'm assuming most of you have mobile phones. I was going to ask who has a mobile phone. It's probably best to ask who hasn't got a mobile phone. No, so you've all got mobiles, which means you can all do some of the basic things I'll talk about first up, like text messaging. Who has a smartphone, one that sort of you might be able to download apps for or connect to the internet? So maybe a quarter, a third, so a fair proportion. And I think the users of your libraries will be pretty much the same, if not a bit further on. I know sort of in my library they've all got smarter phones than all the staff. So if a third of you have smartphones, it's probably more so in the libraries you work in. There's a few facts and figures out there. Some of the latest ones I've found tend to be American, but we're actually a bit further ahead than the US. So the Pew Internet report on mobile access in the US said 59% of American adults had accessed the web through a wireless device, which includes 40% accessing some aspect of the web from the mobile phone. Americans are a bit behind us, so it'd be more so here. And in the US, about 82% of adults own a mobile phone. In the UK, it's closer to around 90%. In fact, in the UK, there's more mobile phones than there are adults, because often people have a work phone and a home phone as well. In younger users, it's even more so. And lots of you are from colleges, yeah? So it's going to be way more than that, because in the 18 to 29-year-olds in the US, two-thirds of that age group access the web on the mobile device. So it's going to be pretty similar here, if not a bit further on. The Morgan Stanley report out December last year, so it's probably a year old, the research they did for this. That's a quote I'm going to read out to you, which I don't normally do. I don't normally read out slides, but they said, the mobile internet is ramping faster than the desktop internet did, and we believe more users may connect to the internet via mobile devices than desktop PCs within 5 years. So the norm to be accessing electronic information, the norm to be accessing the web, will be something they carry around with them. It won't be a fixed PC in your learning resource centre or a fixed PC at someone's house. It'll be something carried around in someone's pocket or bag. Let's back some figures onto the basic mainstream type technologies, and the first one is text messaging. You've all got mobile phones. Practically all the users of your libraries will have mobile phones, and anyone with a mobile phone can send a text message either free as part of a contract or for 10 to 12 pence depending on provider if it's on pay as you go. Which leads on to another question for you, which is probably a bit of a mean one. Who uses text messaging to communicate to the users, whether it's you sending stuff out or providing a number for them to get in touch with you? How many people? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. A handful of people here. Those of you that don't, why not?
We want to.
Yeah. But I mean, it is... You can do complicated things. You can. Someone later on is talking about Text Tools, which is a commercial provider, which may cost sort of a reasonable amount. You can set up those sort of commercial services. If you've got the same IT person, they can set up a web portal for you for very little money. You can send text messages through Outlook if you use Outlook at work. You can even have a pay-as-you-go mobile in a desk. Say your main reference desk, you can have a mobile in there and give out that number to people, and you might only need to stick a tenner on it every few months. So it doesn't need to cost much, but this is old technology. The text messaging became available to the masses, if you like, about the same time as email became available to the masses. It was the early 90s, and you'll provide at least one email address to everybody. You know, it's the main way we tend to communicate these days. So why not use text messaging, which is just as old, it's cheap or free, it makes sense to use it because it will reach all of your users. I won't tell any more about it because I know somebody else is talking about text messaging today. That's just sort of my first little bit. The next step up is social networking, which you might not think of as mobile stuff, but Twitter, I didn't see the point of. Not at all. You know, and we've got a Twitter wall there. That was when I initially tried to use it, a desktop PC, and I was wondering, you know, what's it for? Then I came to the odd conference and thought, oh, you know, it's quite useful, but I probably only used it when I went to a conference. Once I got it on my phone, it really did come into its own, because it's with you all the time. It's really quick and easy to jump on and to use all the time. So I mean, I'm told that Kev has it on his phone all the time. He's sat there tweeting at the minute. And because mobile's taking off, because that will be the main way people connect to the internet over the next few years, these things will become more and more important to you, because they're the way people will really easily get onto things and ask for information and communicate with people. And they're free, which is ace, and you don't necessarily have to tell your IT people about them, which is a bit naughty, but I know we have problems getting permission to do anything at work that involves serious IT. We don't need to tell them if we set up a Twitter account or a Facebook page, because it's not on their servers, so they don't worry about it. If I've got a question I want answered, I tend to turn to Twitter a lot of these days, so I'll ask people on Twitter to try and get the answer back. So it's a really quick and easy thing to do, to set yourself up on Twitter and give people that opportunity to ask you questions from your library service. It's a really nice little way of doing it. But you can communicate to people using things like Twitter without them being on Twitter. So, this comes up. So we have a few hundred users for our Twitter account. Not an enormous amount when we've got 22,000 students, but anybody visiting our web pages will see our updates on Twitter. They'll see our tweets on all the computer and library services web pages. So it's embedded in the pages. They don't need to know that that's from Twitter, but it's a nice way of us keeping in touch with people. If they're on Twitter, they can use that medium to get back to us and talk to us. But if not, it doesn't matter. And it makes our web pages look like they're constantly being updated, even though the main web page probably hasn't been looked at for a year. It's fresh all the time because these updates are constantly coming in. And it's a mobile technology. So I said I'd have two challenges for you today. I know there's problems with getting permission to do things through IT at work. This one doesn't need that permission. You know, you can ask for forgiveness afterwards rather than asking for permission in advance. So start playing with social networks if you don't already at work. And think of it in terms of this is how people on the phones and netbooks and tablets and whatnot are going to be communicating with you. I've got a question that might not work here because the Wi-Fi is a bit dodgy, but we'll see. I think I'll bring it up. For you to use whatever devices you've got in your pockets or on your table at the minute, I want to ask, so does this sort of thing I'm talking about, is this the sort of thing you're doing already? Or do you use a lot more than that? Or are you completely lost and you don't know what a mobile phone is? And there's two ways I want you to answer. If you're on Twitter, tweet @poll, @POLL, followed by one of these keywords. And if you're not on Twitter, but you've got a mobile phone, for sort of standard network rates, so either 10p or free if you've got a contract, if you text one of those keywords to 0762 480 6527, hopefully be readable to most of you on the screen. We'll sort of see what people think. So, do you already do loads more than the stuff I've talked about already? That's 24551. Do you use some of the things like text messaging and Facebook? That's 24553. And, what's a mobile phone? 24554. And while you're doing that, I'll just tell you what this is. Have you got anyone on the stand outside selling things like Quizdom or interactive handsets?
Yeah,
Optivote. Yeah. Probably going to embarrass them though by saying that this is a free way of doing the sort of services that you can have on those interactive handsets. It's a service called Poll Everywhere. There we are, there's some coming in. It's a service called Poll Anywhere, which you set up on the web, and then people can use their own mobile phones or their own laptops or whatever they fancy using to vote on this service. There's also a web platform, so if people are in a PC lab, they can log on to this on the web and vote just using a normal computer without having Twitter or text messaging. I'll just give it a moment longer and then I'll move on. So this particular service is free for up to 30 people, which I thought would cover everybody that was likely to vote today. And it's what I'd call a freemium service. It's free for basic use, but if you were to use it for larger numbers of people, so it was a big conference with 300 people sat there, you'd pay a certain amount more to use the premium service. But they set it at 30, so it's easy to use in classes. So your bog standard class, where you might be having an induction or an information skills session in the library, you can use this for the typical number you're likely to get sat in the classroom. Right, lovely. I'll move on in a moment, but yeah, so maybe a quarter of people do more than this. 2/3 of you sort of do the sort of things I've covered so far, and what's 13%? Probably one person, maybe two people. What's a mobile phone? So you see how easy it is to use people's own mobile devices. It doesn't have to cost you anything. You don't have to buy a specialist kit to do it. Hijack their own mobile devices to do these sort of things. See that one? No. Get back to my slides. Oops. My last of the basic things, if it'll come up for me. Last of my basic things is podcasting and vodcasting. And I'm thinking here, in particular, not using the big microphone and the PC and things that we've got set up over there, but using people's own mobile devices, whether that's a phone or Nintendo DS or a PlayStation Portable or whatever. Loads of these things can do podcasting for you. And I'm going to create a quick podcast here to show you how quick and easy it is to do. Just open up a little application on my phone called Audio Boo. I'm going to click on record. There we are, it counts down. I think that instant podcasts using mobile phones are fantastically easy to do. And I'm using Audio Boo here. They can be great for people who have a learning style that suits listening and sort of then going away and thinking about those things rather than reading or doing. And also for users that don't have English as a first language. Think about how many sort of polite foreign students will sit opposite you and go, I agree. And I'll have a word of what, not understand a word of what you're saying. Podcasts can be a way of them listening to you answer several times. I've just put that into a little podcast. I'm going to call it something. And upload it. And I'll tell you what Audio Boo is now. Might take a moment to come up because the internet's slow. But there's lots of things like Audio Boo. This just happens to be the one that I tend to use. Audio Boo's free. If you've got an iPhone or an Android phone, you can have a little app on your phone which connects you to it effortlessly. If you don't, you can still ring them up, so you can use any phone, because all phones have a microphone on, can make a phone call. So you can ring them up and record over that way, or you can record over the web, so you can have a laptop connected to the internet with a microphone in it and use Audio Boo. it automatically creates an RSS feed for your podcasts. So if you're creating a regular, people subscribe and automatically know when you've got a new one. And last time I checked, I haven't checked recently, they automatically put them into iTunes as well. So it's really easy for people to download them to their own mobile devices, whether that's a phone or a laptop or an iPod, to listen to it wherever they want. And right at the top there, it says Test at Sheffield, which is this little podcast I've done. So it's free. It's really quick. See, I mean, it was up there before the web page opened, and it's really easy to do. So it's something really nice to think about, either using your own mobile devices or using students' own devices, so you could get people to do a learning activity and then describe what they've done in a little podcast, which is then up there for them to share afterwards and to comment on what each other's done. So it's up there forever rather than lost at the end of the session. It's just as easy to do a YouTube video these days, because most phones will act as a camcorder as well. So if you can do a podcast, you can record a video and upload it to YouTube. On to more emerging type stuff, which first of all is QR codes. So the emerging things are things that are sort of nudging against popular awareness, so they might really take off over the next year or two, or they might fall flat on the face and you'll never see them again. So it's sort of, you know, these borderline things. And QR codes are sort of just starting to get there. They've been really popular in Japan for years because the mobile providers in Japan install a reader on all the phones they sell. So they're up there for people to use straight away. In this country, you have to choose to download an application for them. So they're not as widespread. There's sort of a couple of barriers to using them. But what are they? That blocky thing on the left-hand side is a QR code. And they're sort of a 2D version of a barcode, the matrix code. So as a barcode works in one direction, really. It works left to right or right to left, because it doesn't matter how high the lines are. What matters is sort of the horizontal action. A matrix code, like a QR code, goes up and down as well. So it's left to right and up and down. So you can embed a lot more information into them. Or if you're going to read it, I've no idea what's in that QR code. I can't remember. It won't be anything rude, so I'll be all right. These were created by a company called Denso Wave in Japan, who make car components for, I think it's Toyota. And they sort of tended to track all their components as they went through the factory. And I've worked in these sort of environments before, and you sort of, you know, a few years back we would have used bits of paper at the top of every stack. And then they moved on to having a barcode on top of every stack. But they were going, oh, we want more information on each thing as it's going through. So they came up with this standard for a matrix code where they can embed loads more information into each stack of car components that went through. And then for some reason they were really nice and published it as an international standard for everybody to use freely. And because it's a freely available international standard, loads of people have created free QR readers and QR generators that anybody can use and take advantage of. They do things on mobile phones like prompt your phone to make a phone call or to send a text message. It might just contain a chunk of text, which is probably what that one is. It'll just say something like, hello everyone, because that's the one I tend to use. Or they can link to stuff on the web. And it's linking to stuff on the web that really seems magic. So you could link to, say, a YouTube video, or a podcast, or a quiz, or all sorts of interactive things around your library. And I think they're fantastic for linking to sort of context-appropriate help within a library. So you could have, I don't know, how many of you get asked to use the photocopiers in your library or your learning resource centre? And we get asked it loads. If you could have a QR code on top of every photocopier, people that can use QR codes can just scan that and watch maybe a 30-second video on how to use the photocopier. So it's help where people want it, dotted around your library. Gas directional stuff a lot. You know, I don't know, where are the travel books? Where are the books for hairdressing, where are the books for whatever. You could have a board as you walk into the library with a QR code for the main subject areas that can contain maybe a podcast, 20-second podcast, or a set of instructions that'll say, oh, well, yeah, turn right, walk 20 paces, and you'll see them on your left-hand side, and they start off with a big blue book at the start. You could have that sort of friendly directional advice embedded as people walking to wherever you work. So they really are fantastic linking to sort of context-appropriate help. The best way of using them is different in every environment. We threw them all over the place in our library just to see what worked and what didn't work. And for us, the main two things that worked were a link on the library catalogue. Whenever you look up an item on our library catalogue, towards the bottom there'll be a QR code that's automatically generated that links to that catalogue record. Because we often have people bring something up on the catalogue, scroll down incomplete details, and then got lost looking for it. We've seen students try to get around this by bringing up something on the catalogue and holding the phone in front of it and taking a snapshot of the screen so they can take it with them. So a nice little step onwards is to have a QR code linking direct to that information so they can take the whole information with them wherever they go. And that's seen a decent amount of use in our library. Also as well, something that seemed to work for us was embedding extra help in printed handouts, like here. So at the end of printed handouts, which might be sort of two sides or four sides of paper, you can then link to sort of a whole rich world of extra information. Yeah?
You're losing me a bit. How do they read these QR codes on?
On a phone, on practically any camera phone. Yeah. Shall I show you how to make one and show you how to read one? Yeah. I'll show you that in a moment. But I say how best they work will depend on the environment you're in. I talked to a school librarian a little while ago, and what worked really well for them was sticking a QR code on the front of books up for the Carnegie Prize a little while ago that linked to a YouTube video of the author talking about that book. So their users could find out about that book in the author's own words before they decided what to borrow. And that really took off in that library. So it's different for every library. To create a QR code, go on Google, type in QR code generator. Come on. And it'll bring up loads of them. If I click on the top one, they typically come up with something like this, which is telling them what type of QR code you want, whether it's one that links to a web address or to a chunk of text or a phone number or whatever. You type in what you want to do. So, I'll type in my university's library's web address and generate. And there's a QR code that you can take as an image file and put wherever you want, or copy a little bit of code to embed it in your website. For somebody to use that, they need to download a little application to the mobile phone. It's really easy to do for a phone that has an app store, so a Nokia phone or an iPhone or an Android phone. So increasing the app stores about, but practically any camera phone, you can find a QR reader for it. Again, simply by Googling QR code reader in the model of your phone, or going to something like, there's a link on the slide, to Percent Mobile Get QR.
Can I just give a very quick shameless plug? The theme of the next Excellence in Learning Resources Forum meeting at Bradford College on the 18th of November, we're going to do a workshop on QR codes. So if you are interested, we'll go through how you create one. You can actually do it yourself and see, you know, while you do it. Because it's very difficult.
It is.
I had the same problem when I came across QR codes. You kind of think, how would you use that? Unless you're actually doing it and going around the library and scanning the codes and thinking, and then get that kind of light bulb moment. So we will cover that at a later meeting if anybody's interested in that.
Yeah.
Shameless plug out.
Right. I've just opened a QR code reader on my phone and it sort of hijacks the camera. So you don't take a snapshot and feed it into something, it hijacks the camera. And if I point it at that QR code. Shadow. There we are. It's recognised what it is. It's recognised that it's linking to a web address, so it will now take me to that web address. So it's a little application that hijacks your camera and translates what it is. If you don't want to wait till the next workshop, you can play with my phone later on if you want. My next two emerging type things are things like Foursquare and GoWalla, which are location aware services. And you sort of check into these things. They're sort of part social networks and sort of part games. So I came here today and I checked into this location on Foursquare, so people that know me on Foursquare can see where I am. You can also leave tips in locations, so I left a tip saying where my slides for today's session is. So it's something that you'd use on a mobile phone with a GPS chip in normally. These are really taking off at the minute, and there is that social networking aspect within Foursquare, but it also goes out to third-party networks like Twitter or Facebook. And in fact, Twitter and Facebook are getting on this sort of bandwagon as well. So Facebook has Facebook Places now, and you can geolocate where you're sending updates from, and you can geolocate tweets as well. So I think by default I do that. So the tweets I've sent from here today, people can see this is where they're from. They can see it's from this one location. And these sort of location aware services feed into the augmented reality stuff I'm going to talk about in a minute. I'm going to speed on slightly so I don't run out of time. But you get rewards for doing these sort of things. So if Scott checked in today and came back next week to this same venue and checked in again, he might be the person checked into this location the most, and he'd become mayor of the source. So it's sort of a token little reward. And you get points, so you can see what your friends are doing, and sort of see who's getting the most points in a day. You can leave tips on a location. So I left the tip of where my slides were. Some of them, you can leave objects, virtual objects for people to pick up. You can use these for your library. So people using these services, if you go on Foursquare and leave things like when you're open, how to get in touch with you, so common reference questions perhaps, then when other people go in Foursquare, anywhere near your library, they don't need to be within your library, they can see those tips. So you can take advantage of these sort of location aware services. Even if you don't really want to use them yourself, you can sort of get into that space for the people that are using them. And these do have implications for the augmented reality, which I'll talk about in a moment. We're hoping to do something similar at Huddersfield Uni, using these sort of ideas of tips and rewards and badges for a service called Lemon Tree, as long as we find the money over the next few months, which is dodgy with all the things going on. So we'll give people rewards, these sort of token virtual rewards, for doing things like taking books out, leaving comments on books, viewing videos on how to do things on our information literacy pages. So people will get these sort of rewards that people are into at the moment with existing networks for doing library stuff. So for instance, I don't want to sit on the desk in the library telling people how to use the photocopier or how to use the printers. I'd quite like them to have the print master badge in Lemon Tree, which means they already know how to do it themselves. Onto the real speculative stuff, which is augmented reality, which I've got YouTube videos for, which I don't think are going to work because the network's too slow. It's really hard to describe what augmented reality is, which is why I was going to show you a video of how to do it. if anyone wants to really know how it works, I've got some fun little augmented reality apps on my phone that I can show you later on when we're playing with things. It's sort of taking the real world and laying a virtual layer of information over the top of it. So in sort of science fiction type films or books, you might have people looking at the real world and then having a stream of extra information fed straight to their brain, overlaying it, or through contact lenses, or maybe through goggles they wear and sort of the lower end stuff. So you could walk around the room and sort of maybe see hovering over each person's head who they are and what their email address is and what their Twitter name is, for instance. So it's virtual, it's the virtual world and the real world sort of mixing together, so augmenting the physical reality. You might think this is sort of way out there and this will never work and this is, you know, too far to even think about. But if you think what you need for these sort of things to work, to sort of mix the virtual world and the real world, what you need is sort of a device that's connected to the internet to pull the virtual information on, a device that has a camera at the front and a sort of decent display to show you that stuff. You need something that has a decent bit of processing power to mix the two together. You need somebody that knows where it is, maybe with a GPS chip in and a compass. So you need something like this that I've got in my hand and I have in my pocket all the time. So augmented reality applications are already here and they work fantastically on smartphones. If you search YouTube for nearest tube application, that was probably the first sort of mass market augmented reality application that was out there. That allows you to walk around London, getting lost like I would if I was around London. Bring up the application on your phone, and you can see through the camera and on the screen what's in front of you. Laid over that information will be little tags which will show you where the nearest tube stations are and where they go to. And you can click on them to get walking directions to that tube station. So augmented reality applications are here, and they have practical uses that people are already using. I've used one today because I've parked in Meadow Hall and I'm awful at remembering where my car is. So I've used one called Car Finder. It stepped out of my car, said, "I'm here." Now, if I bring up that little application in here, I can move around until I'm pointing in the right direction and there'll be a big gather that says, "Your car's that way," and it's 200 metres. So now, as long as I remember to use that application, I don't need to lose my car again. So they are practical, they are here. How they link with some of the other mobile services I've talked about is things like geolocating your tweets, checking in to things like Foursquare and GoWalla, because most of the augmented reality applications aren't dedicated, like the Car Finder one or the tube station. They allow you to sort of view different layers of virtual reality over the top. So you can view things like where tweets are in a location or where people have checked into Foursquare and the tips that they've left. So I could use something like a Crosshair or Layer, which are augmented reality applications, and bring up Foursquare tips. And I could study Meadow Hall and looking around and say, "Oh yeah, someone's left a tip about Debenhams, and someone's left a tip about Sainsbury's, and someone's left a tip about the sauce." And I'll look at my tips saying where the slides are. So if you're using some of these other technologies and tell them where you are, you automatically feed into some of these augmented reality applications. You don't need to know about them, but you need to know that they're out there and they will take advantage of that system. So you can put information about your location, about your libraries, information that you want people to see, and you don't necessarily need to know what application they're going to use to view it, but they could be stood somewhere around your library and just stumble across all the information that you want to put out there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. There's also generic ones that link to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So you can stand here and put it to one, point it around, and it will pull from Wikipedia information about think about landmarks that will be around. So it sounds speculative, but it's already here. It's already around us all the time. You just might not know about it. And that really has the opportunity to change things massively over the next few years. You know, it's within the next 5 years, I'm told that you won't be able to buy bog standard mobile phones. They'll all be smartphones. So practically all of them will be able to do this stuff. I was going to talk about information literacy, which I'll just skip over quickly so I don't run out of time. But I think information literacy changes in the mobile world. If within the next few years, the main way of searching for information, the main way of getting on the web, will be a handheld device, it's going to be a completely different way of interacting with information to using something that's fixed to a wall. People accessing information on the bus, walking into work or walking into college, people accessing information just wherever they are rather than in nice controlled environments. So you really have to think about that in the way you're delivering information. Being information literate in the mobile world might mean things like knowing what app to use on a phone or how to make sense of the question that they want to ask and sort of extracting out the key concepts so they can ask in 140 characters on Twitter. Or how to evaluate the sort of people that they're meeting on these social networks so they know who to trust and know who to get the information from. So these mobile technologies really change the way people interact, not just with each other, but with the world of information that you're out there providing them. So don't expect them to act the same way as in the old environment. I really think mobile is different. Because of that, I've just got a second challenge for you, which is sort of be radical about these sort of things. Don't just think about what tech here is now that your IT people might let you play with if you're really lucky and really beg. Think about how mobiles will change things over the next few years and try and get there in advance. Try and make sure you don't lose that ground before it's too late. Do something about it now. My slides will be up there as well as presumably on the
Your site. All the kind of like presentations from today available after the event anyway.
Yeah, there'll also be audio up on the ePrint site as well.